This is Kevin Conroy, the voice of Batman. You're listening to the Nerdcast on ProjectNerd.com.
Before we get started, does anyone want to get out?
I knew it. I knew you were bluffing. I knew he was bluffing.
You're listening to the Nerdcast.
I feel like I should say something smart.
With Adam, Bob, Iggy, and Tyler.
You mustn't be afraid to dream a little bigger, darling.
Only on Project Nerd.
That is one big pile of shit.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Nerdcast, episode 204 from Project Nerd, brought to you by Geek Garage. The Nerdcast has been proudly sponsored by the Geek Garage, where the best geek-themed vehicles live. Visit Geek Garage at geek-garage.com. There's a bunch of really cool ones. I saw this one that was like a car made to look like the Normandy from the Mass Effect series. It was really cool.
Oh, yeah.
But then a lot of like classic ones. I saw a General Lee. I saw a Jurassic Park Jeep. But yeah,
Just
a place where people go and can register, and you can see the locations of all sorts of like super geek themed vehicles. So
yeah, and you can get them out to your event. If you got a nerdy event going on, you got a Jurassic Park or Jurassic World themed birthday party for going on, you hop on, see if somebody can come out and have the Jeep there. No problem.
It's fantastic. So big thanks to Geek Garage for sponsoring the Nerdcast. As you can tell, there's only two of us here this week. It is everyone's favorite thing, the TNA show.
Are we going with...
We're definitely going with the TNA show.
With TNA show? Okay. All right.
Who doesn't like the TNA show? So obviously, I'm Tyler, filling in for our fearless leader, Iggy. And then, of course, our great friend from across the pond, Adam, is here joining us. Adam, how you doing, my man?
Doing very good. You know, having a great weekend. I haven't been outside, but it's been gorgeous outside, so more power to all those folks who did go outside.
Fantastic. So we have a few things to talk about this week, but I think starting it off like we usually do, unsurprisingly, It Chapter 2 took the box office down in big fashion. I say big fashion. It made what did it end up making over the weekend?
Well, I mean, we record on Sunday, so we're still learning what it's going to get on the weekend, but they're pinning it somewhere between, I think, 90 and 100 million. So its preview, the Thursday night returns, got it at about $10 million domestically. So that's under what the first one did, which was $13 million. It's just under what Wonder Woman did at $11 million, but over what Logan did. So kind of judging historically, if you look at Logan, it had like a $90 million weekend. Wonder Woman had a little over $100 million weekend, and it's somewhere between there. So on pace for probably $95 million, which is not bad considering the entire box office last weekend only brought in $91 million. So that's every movie.
Yeah.
It was only $91
million. So yeah, it's been kind of a rough few weeks for the box office after the last kind of hurrahs of a few blockbusters. Yeah,
I mean, Lion King, really, and Hobbs and Shaw. That's it. Yeah.
And Hobbs and Shaw didn't do... I mean, it did good. It didn't do crazy.
Right,
so.
It had that good weekend, but no legs, right?
No legs, yeah.
People wanted to see it, went and saw it.
I'm curious to see if it has legs, because I've talked to a lot of people who have seen it who enjoyed it immensely. I've also read a lot of reviews that said, it's okay. The one thing that does stand out is everyone says Bill Hader's amazing in it, so I'm excited about that. Yeah. I love Bill Hader.
Bill Hader... He's definitely worth the price of admission. Very, very good. I actually really liked, you know, there's a article I think it was BuzzFeed that did it that has the casting. So it has the young kid and then the adult playing the same person, and it shows them side by side. And I think the casting is really, really good. The only one that seems a little weird is Bill in as a child is the tallest character, and James McAvoy is very much not the tallest character, and they're both playing Bill. So that's the only one that seemed a little weird, but they look well enough, and James McAvoy can act his ass off. So he does.
Maybe Bill just had an early growth spurt that everyone passed him.
Yeah, it's entirely possible. I was the tall kid at 12, and I stopped at 5'9". So that's I can understand that for sure.
But you enjoyed it. It was awesome. I still haven't seen it yet, but I know you went and saw it.
Oh, yeah, definitely went and saw it. So got the same opening night here, which was great. It was really good. I liked it a lot. there is a cameo that is absolutely perfect. And it's only a cameo if you're really into It. So you have to have, you have to have seen and remember well the miniseries from 1990. And then it's perfect. I don't want to spoil it. I want you to be like, oh shit, because it's good. But then the movie's great. The acting's fantastic. I think Bill Skarsgård kills it again as Pennywise. You get him without makeup a little bit and just as creepy, if not creepier, because
You say without white makeup, he still has some like.
Well, I mean, so no, like it's him as I guess is supposed to be just a regular person and kind of, you know, doing the white face painting thing. So it's a little creepy that way, but like he does a lot of the practical effects. So like in the movie, when Pennywise, the clown's eye starts to drift off to the side, Bill Skarsgård can do that with one of his eyes. He can let it just wander on its own. And the weird like lip thing that he can do, like that's all Bill Skarsgård's face. For, you know, just under his control, which is crazy. And so, I mean, he's still very creepy and the makeup doesn't help or doesn't make it better, but it's still unsettling without the makeup. So he does a good job. I mean, I really enjoyed it. I'm curious. I mean, it's so Stephen King. I will mild spoiler, not really, because it's just kind of poking fun at himself. The writers talk about how, like all Stephen King stories, there isn't an author in this, and Bill grows up to be a horror author, and the entire movie, everybody gives him shit about how his endings are crap. Like, oh, I really, really like that book right up until the ending. And I think that's probably the number one knock that it has. Certainly what the miniseries had, like everybody was terrified of it and all the way until the end. And then it's a, you know, a weird spider and everyone's like, that's really not scary. So so they play that throughout the entire movie, because you know everybody talks about Bill being an author, and so that was pretty funny.
was the ending satisfying?
Definitely better than the miniseries.
Okay. I mean, that's not the highest of bars to clear, but all right,
I'll no give it's you not that. The highest of bars to clear. I mean, in the end, the ending of that story and everything that kind of goes into it, they were never the creepiest parts. Like you read Stephen King's books and they just usually aren't. And, you know, it's a critique that he's experienced for a long time that, you know, he does these horrible, horrible, you know, terrifying twists and turns throughout. And then you get to the end and it's just kind of like, and I'm done. that's the end of the story. I don't know what else you want from me. I'm going to see it again. If that's an indication of how much I liked it.
Because they definitely excise some stuff in the first one, and also the way they're telling it is like all the past in one and all the future in one, with few exceptions. How true did they say to some of the more, what's the word, world building / weird metaphysical stuff of like it? Like, do we learn about like the turtle or anything like that?
No, they embrace some of that idea without
having to get
without really getting into it. Yeah. So there's definitely some weirdness going on, and they play into it with First Nations peoples as opposed to really digging into everything there. But they do a good job of calling back to a lot of things from the book. And in terms of it playing, it the second movie plays much more like the book does, where you get adult interaction leading to a remembered child interaction. Right. And so that's, you know, that's really kind of you bounce back and forth kind of throughout the entire reading of the book. And that's a little more of what the miniseries did. We didn't do any of that in the first movie, but the second movie, you have to, right? Because the whole premise of not remembering Derry when you're not in Derry, then they come back and all of a sudden or start having to deal with all of the things that they had to deal with.
Does at any point, do they go with a Pennywise POV in the book, in the new movie? Because that was the one thing from the book that I thought would be the hardest to do in the movie, if at all. But if you don't do it, you lose a ton of like backstory, kind of origin-y kind of stuff. But I don't know how you would really do it in a movie.
Yeah, no. You stick with the characters that you got. You get some... So, I mean, how well do you remember the book?
Pretty well.
So the event that brings everybody back.
Uh-huh.
that happens.
Okay.
Which I was like, okay, that, you know, that checks out. And then that led to some discussion for Laura and I on the, as we were coming home about the change in the setting, the time change in the setting. So moving it from 50s and 80s to 80s and 2017 is where it ends up, 89 and 2017.
Makes that event a little bit more.
Yeah. So it does a few things, right? So I think overall the change is for me probably negative, because there's no point in time where a teenager, even a young teenager in 1989, is comfortable with clowns at all. And so like it being a clown, Pennywise being a clown, it's not disarming. Like there's no part of the story where you're like, oh, it's just a clown, no big deal. But in whatever it was, 1957, I think, is when the original was set. 1957, middle school age children, young teenagers, just preteens, 12 and 13 year olds. Yeah, it's a clown. It's a regular thing. It's something they would be used to seeing with circuses touring and stuff like that. So it's more accepting that they would be disarmed by a clown than 1989, when we have, you know, news reports of John Wayne Gacy are out and people kind of know that
clowns are creepy.
Adult men dressing up and wanting to be around children is kind of a weird thing, I guess. You know, we've accepted that by this point in time. So the setting changes a little bit different. Certainly the event that brings everybody back then has a little more saliency, I guess. It felt a little forced in whatever it was, 84 or 86 when the book is set, but certainly something that we've seen for sure recently, unfortunately.
Fair enough. I'm definitely going to see it, but you're giving it a strong recommendation. People should definitely see it.
Oh yeah. It's an eight out of 10 for me, probably four, yeah, somewhere around there. A little over eight, maybe. I'm good with that scoring. It's really well done. I enjoyed the hell out of it. I mean, it's 2 hours and 40 minutes long, and I didn't feel that time, which is kind of the best thing you can say about a long movie.
Definitely.
You get done and you're like, shit, I was in this movie at 8:30. Why is it midnight? Like, what the hell?
Yeah, that's definitely good to hear. I've tried to think of the last one. I'm trying to get some friends who were thinking about going and seeing the director's cut of Midsommar, which is already an incredibly long movie, and they've made it longer. And you feel the length in that movie, but I think you're supposed to at points. Like, you're supposed to feel like it's dragging for on and on. At the same time, there's parts in the story that just have some sag to them, so you feel it. But if you can go almost 3 hours and not notice it, and it really clips along, like, that's some of the highest praise you can pay to a movie or an editor. Well,
that's the thing. So, I mean, you know, it has its fair bits of jump scare, which you're going to have. And even, like I said, they pay homage pretty well to the miniseries and the book. And so even though you know some of those things are happening or going to happen, it's still scary. And they do a good job. And it is not just jump scary, but creepy scary as well. So definitely go see it. If you're interested at all, if you saw the first one, you definitely have to see this one. And if you're interested in it at all, watch the first one, watch the second one. I think they're both really good.
Definitely. I know one of my friends had to make his wife watch the first one last night because she had not seen it and didn't like scary movies, but really wants to see the new one. Also, if you're going to go to the movies this week, there's really not much else to see. So Angel Has Fallen, Good Boys, and then stuff that's been out for weeks. Like, there's just the box office has been, the cupboard has been pretty bare. So
right, as of Friday, so the Friday numbers for It ended up a little over 37 million and there was nothing else over 2 million. So that kind of shows you the box office numbers won't be super strong overall, and it'll be all It, and then everything else won't add up to even as much as It did, I don't think. So
fair enough. Well, go see It. The Nerdcast, the TNA show recommends. Two thumbs up. So moving away to movies that are out there to movies that are coming, we cannot stop hearing about Todd Phillips' Joker movie.
Yeah.
When it was being made, we couldn't hear anything else about it. The cast was amazing. You know, everyone from Joaquin Phoenix to Bob De Niro to Marc Maron. Then, like, early reviews started trickling out, and they seemed really positive. We got some little teaser trailers, and it seemed weird, if maybe not so much a comic book movie as just a movie that may happen to take place in a place called Gotham, which a lot of the early reviews are very pointed at. And then it went to the Venice Film Festival, and it won the Golden Lion. The last two movies to win the Golden Lion at the Venice Film Festival were Roma and The Shape of Water. So people really like this movie. Yeah,
so that's a Best Picture winner and what was the Best Picture favorite going into the Oscars. So
yes. So apparently people really like this movie. I don't know if I'm more or less excited to see it with all the buzz, but I'm definitely going to see this movie. I have mixed feelings about it. Like, I'm glad that Warner Brothers is finally getting a property right, but I'm worried that the reason they're getting the property right is because they just hired a good director and said, hey, make a movie and then we'll slap some names on it. Like, we'll call the city Gotham and we'll call a guy the Joker, and there might be someone in the movie named Wayne. I don't know. Which is fine, like grounding them in reality, but I don't know. I still don't know that they figured it out, which is fine. Like, if this movie is amazing and beautiful and great, it sounds like it, I'm excited for them. But from the sounds of it, the direction they went with this has gotten them no closer to cracking the code on actually making a good DC comic book movie, which is neither here nor there. Good movies should be celebrated, but...
Oh, yeah, right. No, exactly. So I think Iggy and I talked about this last week. I think that's like, how funny is it that the best DC comic movie since the Batman, since Christopher Nolan's Batman trilogy, is going to be one that they've very clearly stated is not part of the DC extended universe. So like, this isn't our movie universe, but here's a comic book movie because people love comic book movies, and it's going to blow the doors off of everything. So,
yeah. And for all intents and purposes, a comic book movie in basically name only and reference,
right.
But I mean, it looks fantastic and people seem to really like it. Although, and this is something you and I talked about a little bit yesterday, it's something I'd actually been thinking about a lot. There's been, and whether or not it's warranted yet, sight unseen, but there's been a lot of backlash around, like, the last thing we need in the world right now is celebrating a character like the Joker.
Right. I mean, he is, for all intents and purposes, he is a terrorist, right? He does everything he can to terrorize Gotham completely and totally all of the time without hesitation. And it's throughout the comics, he's not...
He's an abuser. He's a mass murderer.
He doesn't have any redeeming qualities, right? He says some funny one-liners occasionally, but they're usually just so awful and in like such the worst situation to say them that you can't even really laugh at them as you're reading through. You're like, that's funny, but... You just paralyzed somebody and probably raped them. So this is not the time for that.
Yeah, really. You just beat that, you beat that child to death with a baseball bat just now. And so, yeah, I mean, not to like, we're always going to be telling dark stories about dark people and they're fascinating and interesting, but the Joker definitely has a very special place in pop culture and in the, you know, the cultural consciousness. And when you do an origin story, when you show the reasons behind someone becoming who they are, whether it be the Joker or not, here's the thing. I can't make the judgments. I haven't seen the movie yet, but there's definitely a fear that like, are we going to make him at times, even if it's not the whole movie, a sympathetic character where you understand where he's coming from, which you should never be able to understand where the Joker's coming from. And I think a lot of people also are a little gun shy just because there was and it's still today, but a long period of time where people used Heath Ledger's portrayal of the Joker as some sort of like role model or life goal or like justification of like, this guy's got it all figured out. Like, this is my...
Right. This person knows what society really is. And the best way to make that change is to
be like the Joker.
To go right full in on it. Yeah. Well, and you know, gun shy being a very salient phrase for what Heath Joker's Ledger's part of that legacy is, the tragedy in Aurora, Colorado, with the shooting during the Dark Knight Rises premiere. And then what was it? 14 people died and over 50 people injured, something like that. I mean, it was awful. And so there's reason for concern there. And when you go back and again, kind of looking at comics and looking at source material, it is the Killing Joke, right? Where you kind of get the Joker's idea of one bad day can make anybody like me, right?
Yes.
And that's the goal, is to break Jim Gordon so that his reactions are what the Joker's reactions would be. That's kind of the backstory there. And without, I mean, not seeing the movie, I'm hoping there's a balance like Jim Gordon in The Killing Joke, someone who's, you know, steadfastly, no, that's not how I would react. That's not how any normal human being would react. There's something not right with the way you've interpreted how everything went down to you. So you need that balance, I think, to remove any of the sympathies that you might kind of feel when you're reading what happened to him. That's all I got.
Yeah, no, sorry. I just realized I wasn't muted. No, and here's the thing. I don't think that anyone... It gets tricky just because of like the times we live in and the things that people will latch onto. But at the same time, I don't hold artists responsible for bad interpretations or obsessions over their work. It's not their fault. Like, we can't stop telling good and dark and twisted stories just because certain people are going to latch onto them in the wrong way. But it is something to think about. I mean, I'm curious to see what the reaction to this character is over the next few weeks after it comes out.
Yeah, it's definitely something to look at and to watch, and something to even think about while watching. Certainly for a second viewing. First viewing, I like to just let whatever's happening happen. But certainly a second viewing, which, I, like we talked about, it, the reviews are good enough so far that probably seeing it twice.
Most definitely.
So that's not a problem. But watching a second viewing, kind of seeing what's going on with that and how they deal with some of those potential fallout.
Indeed. But yeah, I mean, we just have to wait till it comes out, I guess. Like, it's all this is just speculation, but the general consensus above just about everyone who's come into contact with it is that it is an amazing movie, a masterpiece. And now there's Joaquin Phoenix buzz for the Oscar. So,
sure. Yeah, and the real question is if it weren't called Joker, right?
Would anyone care?
Right. Is there this same concern going forward that it's going to create this similar problems or worse problems than our last Joker portrayal? And so I think, you know, that's another thing to think about. Like, if they had just made a creepy movie with a, you know, horrible main character that horrible things happen to, Taxi Driver, do you have that fear, or is it just, oh man, that is a gorgeous piece of cinema?
Yeah. And I think there's something to be said for, once you tie it into that comic book or fantasy baseland, you have a main line into people who already maybe have trouble separating the two, you know. So it definitely makes it easier to slip in, but who knows? I don't want to get too into the weeds of weird obsessive internet culture, but it's I mean, definitely
gonna, we can have later, right?
We're definitely going to see a lot of people dressed up as him for Halloween, and we're definitely going to see a lot of weird memes around it. So
yes,
just have to wait and see. But I mean, I'm excited to see it. I mean, everywhere I turn, I hear more and more just glowing praise for the movie. So
yeah, and then I'm with you. I don't know if I would rather a movie that is that good creep under the radar, or if I, you know, I want it that far out. Like, it's got expectations now, right? And I've done usually a pretty good job of keeping my expectations low for DC movies, unfortunately, because they're going to have some issues. But now, looking at this one, is it a good thing or a bad thing to have this much praise this early?
Yeah, I mean, because its U.S. release date is still, like, what, 4 weeks away? It comes out the 4th of October, I say.
Yeah, that first weekend of October, yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, we're going to hear a lot more about it before it actually hits the theater. So, and I'm curious to see if it does, because almost every movie like this has, especially when they do well on the festival circuit or get really glowing early reviews, like watching that bell curve of, like, if everyone comes out really early and loves it, then there's going to be this second wave of critics coming out and like, no, it's dog shit, you're all wrong. And then you get like the swing back, possibly. Like, there's so many movies I've watched that happen with. Like, what was the one that was just really egregious? Oh, La La Land. Like, La La Land was the greatest movie ever made.
Yeah.
And then a shticky, stupid ass fucking musical. And then back to like the greatest movie ever made within a 6 day period. It was super funny to watch. Watching critics from various channels react over the course of like the curve is pretty entertaining. So, well, I mean, I can speak for, I think, everyone, both Adam and I, and probably everyone else who works for Project Nerd in the Nerdcast, and we all want to see this movie, and we'll all will see this movie. So I'm excited. I don't know, is there anything else coming up in the next 4 or 5 weeks? And even, so we got It, and then we've got Joker. Is there anything else coming out in September that's even on the radar?
No, I'm trying to think of all the previews that I saw, and they're all for stuff like well down the road.
I'm a little bit curious about The Goldfinch, but only because I'm curious how someone managed to adapt that book into a movie, because it's mind-boggling. It is mind-boggling to me that that book has been turned into a movie.
Right.
But other than that, I can't think of another movie that's coming out in the next... When's Ad Astra come out? Is that this month?
I think it's October as well, but I'm not sure. And that looks good.
Ad Astra, I'm really excited about. So yeah. That one I'm excited about, but I think that's probably the only one between now and Joker that even... Yeah, I don't know. We'll see, I guess. But yeah, all the trailers have been for stuff that's... Have you seen the new Jojo Rabbit trailer? I'm real excited about that movie.
Yes. So I did watch that, and I don't even know not the feeling, but the ambiance maybe that Watiti gets in his movies is just so, it's so fantastic and it's so complete, I guess is the way to think of it. So, you know, watching that compared to like the Birds of Prey teaser that came out, and it doesn't feel, you could take the individual scenes from the Birds of Prey teaser and they don't feel like they could ever exist in the same world. Right. Like it doesn't seem like the same kind of movie. Cause you got the craziness of Harley Quinn and then the butt kicking action with the rest of the, you know, the Birds of Prey going on as well. But then you watch the Jojo Rabbit trailer and somehow, like, I still don't understand. It's Moonrise Kingdom, right?
Oh, it's Twisted Wes Anderson. Like, it's right. Yeah,
totally, I mean, like it is Moonrise Kingdom. It's with Nazis as opposed to Boy Scouts.
Yeah. It's Moonrise, the Third Reich.
Yeah, it's exactly. And so, but, and then you get the song that's playing in German, and how does this all work? How does he make all of that work in something that feels complete and, you know, believable maybe isn't the right word, but like, yeah, that's what would happen. This is what would happen in the world he's created. Obviously, it just feels right, I guess.
Right. It just looks so. So good. And obviously I'm in the pocket for Taika. I have been since, you know, Flight of the Conchords, What We Do in the Shadows. I love Hunt for the Wilder People. I love Ragnarok. Like, I'll watch whatever he does, but God, this looks like it might be his best thing yet. It looks so good. And he's gotten so many people in it. Everyone from, there's Sam Rockwell in it. I saw Stephen Merchant pop up. Like, they just, there's Scarlett Johansson's in it.
He's in it. I mean, like
Rebel Wilson's in it.
Right.
I'm so excited about it. I'm trying to think if there's any other trailers that I've seen recently. Oh yeah, they made a new Bad Boys trailer. I didn't know they were making another Bad Boys movie. It definitely looks like all the other Bad Boys movies. It's basically a trailer of occasionally things blowing up, but mostly just Will Smith and Martin Lawrence bickering at each other rather than doing their job.
Yeah. And I think that's okay. So, is it Michael Bay?
Think so.
Yeah, I don't know.
It definitely looked like Michael Bay. It's called...
It's got to be his production company, I would assume.
It's called Bad Boys for Life.
Right.
Not Bad Boys 3.
We'll have
a heavy And dose. It is directed... No, it is not being directed. I don't even know if he's a producer on it.
Well, he's got to be, right?
Jerry Bruckheimer and Will Smith are the producers. It's directed by Adil L. Arnby and Bilal Fallah. So two guys I have
never heard of them. Okay.
They're Belgian film and television directors. They've done some other stuff. A lot of it foreign. They are also apparently tabbed to be the directors for Beverly Hills Cop 4.
Oh, so they're just people that a studio can tell to make a movie that's just like the other movies that came out a long time ago.
I guess.
And who do you get to play in a Beverly Hills Cop 4?
I mean, it says it's going to have, let me see here.
Can't have Eddie Murphy. Can't be Axel Foley. It's got to be.
Yeah. In January 2017, it was revealed that a new entry in the franchise would commence filming in June of 2017 with Eddie Murphy reprising his role.
No.
But then as of 2019, there's no word on further development on the film. I know Eddie Murphy has come out multiple times recently because he's been kind of like popping back up again. He's going to host SNL in the new season. He went on Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee with Jerry Seinfeld, new season. And he is 100% making a new Coming to America and got everyone in the cast to come back, including James Earl Jones.
Yeah, James Earl Jones. Yeah. Okay, I'm on board with that. Like,
yeah, I don't know if it's in. I don't know if it's in production yet or not, but he's like, Arsenio's back, James Earl Jones is back, he's back. Like, they're doing it. It's a thing. He's making it. I'm 100% on board with that.
Yeah, I'm okay with that. Yeah, that's fine. I'd like new stuff, but I'm okay with that too.
I'm okay with Eddie Murphy coming back into the world again.
Right.
He's been gone for too long.
All right, that's a bunch of movie talk. What else we got going on?
I don't know. Borderlands 3 comes out this weekend. Real excited about that.
Are you?
Were you a Borderlands guy?
I never got into them, no.
Really?
So, like, I like a good looter. I'm always on board for good looters.
It is the looter of looters.
I can play some Diablo, let me tell you. Still, I mean, the game's, 7 years old now, and it's still just as fun as it ever was.
I still boot it up every couple seasons or so just to
just try something new, see what they're doing. Okay, yeah, I'm on board. Let's do this. Fantastic. But the Borderlands, like, it was almost too much loot for me. And in such a different environment than what I'm used to, like, trying to figure out, like, I never played a lot of shooters, so it being a shooter was making it a little harder for me to begin with, and then trying to deal with all the stats and figure out fire rate versus fire range versus magazine clip size versus individual perks on all of the weapons, and then the fact that there are, you know, like 4 million weapons in the game, I think, is a conservative estimate. It just felt like too much, so I'd start playing it, and I'd get about 10 levels into it, and I'm like, man, there's a lot going on here.
Now, is this Borderlands 1 or Borderlands 2? Or Borderlands, the pre-sequel?
I've tried all of them, right?
Really? So,
yeah. I played 1 when it came out thinking, you know, I borrowed it from a buddy. He's like, oh, this is super fun. You'll enjoy it. And I played it a little bit and couldn't get into it. And then I skipped 2 when it came out, but picked it up later for when it was on sale or something. And then just recently, the pre-sequel and whatever they call it, the Handsome Jack Collection, was a PlayStation free game this summer, earlier this summer, June or May, something like that. I picked that up and started playing through that and just kind of felt into the same thing. I think I was playing the pre-sequel and it felt better, but I've got no stick-to-itiveness with that game for whatever reason. Like, I'll put in 150 hours into Skyrim, no problem. And I'll put, I'm about 70 hours into Assassin's Creed Odyssey on a second playthrough right now. No problem with that either. Grinding out for 15 hours on Borderlands just feels like too much for
is it just reason. Is it just the shooter element? That's really the only difference there.
Yeah, it is. But I put in a lot of time into Destiny.
And that's fair. That's
an amount of time into Destiny 2 and kind of even have come back to Destiny 2.
Are you going back to Destiny? Because the big patch is coming right now, isn't it?
It is. Yeah, getting ready for. So the Shadowkeep was supposed to be out this week. Was supposed to be out this week. Got pushed back to October. I'm hoping that's not a bad sign, but we'll see. Bungie's in complete control instead of being Activision anymore. So I'm guessing that the pushback was to make it so that everything was right for that launch, but we'll see in a couple of weeks on that. But yeah, back into that. And it's, you know, they've fixed a lot of the problems that I had with Destiny 2. And so enjoy playing it. So I don't know. I've put time into shooters now. And just like I said, maybe I'm not smart enough to be able to handle all of the things that they're with you.
I don't think it's that, but I mean, it is definitely, there are a lot of people who just, it doesn't click for, like,
yeah,
the art style for some doesn't work. The weird humor doesn't work, but I don't know. I've enjoyed them. I never got like really into them. Like some people did. I came to them late, but I mean, are there any games on the horizon? I mean, the only thing between now and Cyberpunk that I'm actually really excited about is Outer Worlds, the new Obsidian game.
That looks good.
Mm-hmm.
What is it? Control or God, something else came out recently that looked pretty good, but I can't remember what it is. I mean, you'll appreciate this, Tyler, because it happens to you fairly frequently. Fallen back down a WoW hole. So that has happened and has recently consumed all of my free time with my wife.
Retailer classic.
So classic was the bait, I think, right? And I really think that's what Blizzard saw it as. You had players signing petitions to get Classic going and to finish it, and they put in their time and they did it right, and you fire up Classic and you play it and you're like, oh man, there's only 4 races and there's only 6 classes. This is great. I don't have a lot of choices. I don't got to worry about a dual specialization at 65 or whatever it is where you dual spec now these days, and this is going to be fantastic. I'm going to get back into this. And then you run like the first 5 missions where you need to collect something from a damn boar, and there's 75 other people also killing the same 7 boar that are in this area, and the drop that you need from it only comes every 12th boar, and 5 hours later, and you haven't done anything because you can't find that damn boar. I quickly found out why they changed so many things from vanilla with all of the updates.
It is, it's interesting. So me and some friends definitely started playing Classic when it came out just to try it out. And as someone who played a lot of vanilla WoW and a lot of BC WoW and a lot of Wrath WoW, specifically those three expansions, then those three versions I played probably the most of, it was just pure unadulterated nostalgia straight into my veins. Like, but that wore off pretty quickly. And then you realized, oh, that's right. Vanilla was kind of a shitty game. And like, it's gotten so much better. But now here's the thing. There are a lot of things about, even without like the quality of life changes and stuff, there's things I like about it, like that are not nostalgia related. Like a lot of the classes early on had a lot more flavor. Like they had a lot, their class fantasies were a lot more defined. At the same time, it made them wildly unbalanced, which doesn't work in today's games. Like you can't have one. And like you, and Blizzard struggles with it constantly because every new patch, every new raid, there's always a class that's just destroying everyone else. There's always a class that's just dog shit. But back then, like, there were just classes that you just didn't play unless you really wanted to enjoy it because they were suboptimal, where there were some classes and some specs that just destroyed the game and talent builds. I liked a little bit, I like a lot of the old school crazy fury theory crafting, where it's like people are using full-on spreadsheets and formulas to calculate just the right weapon and just the right whatever, like that kind of stuff I enjoyed. And I enjoyed the fact that like your server was actually a community before cross server play and like looking for group and stuff like that. Like, for one, you had to be kind of less of a dickhole all the time because like you're gonna run into the same people all the time, the same guilds, the same people, because there's thousands of people on a server, but there's still not that many. And you just got to know people who weren't in your guild, just because you saw them all the time, or you were matched up against them all the time, or things like that. So some of that kind of stuff is really fun, but a lot of the QL, quality of life, just getting from place to place, certain kinds of skills and classes and money, it's just a slog, and no one has time for that anymore.
It is a grind. Well, and so 15 years ago, they had the benefit of the novelty, right? Like, there weren't a lot of games that let you do that, that let you, what back then was pretty easily, get with a group of friends and play through a shit ton of content.
Yeah, I mean, it was, there's a reason that every year since whatever, like, everyone's been looking for the WoW killer, because prior to them, it was like, what, EverQuest, maybe Ultima Online, I don't know, was Anarchy Online up by that point? But, like, MMOs weren't really a thing. I mean, EverQuest was obviously a huge thing, but not like WoW became.
Well, they didn't have the public consciousness, right? Like, that was the big difference with WoW. For whatever reason, it caught on. I mean, not whatever reason, it's a really good game. I think they did a great job, but everybody played it. I remember that commercial, I think it was for Wrath of the Lich King, right? When, you know, you had Chuck Norris and you had like all of the celebrities.
Mr. T.
That they had their own like little WoW avatar and everything. Like, it was fantastic. And they're bragging about 10 million monthly players, and that's a lot of people playing a video game, man. Like, it's crazy. It's certainly there. And so, yeah, we did Classic. We enjoyed that. Eventually it was like, yeah, this is a grind. And so we switched over and, you know, went from like 3 days of playing to get to level 10. I didn't want to, I could have gone and downloaded, you know, whatever it is, Questy or all of the add-ons.
Yeah, some add-ons.
Yeah. You have to get the add-ons to make a game playable. And I was like, or I could just start a retail character and I could be a Draenei because that's what I like to be. And I love their starting area. And
God, you filthy Alliance.
Yeah, you're fine. Get over it. Well, we can talk about why I play Alliance later if we want to. But, you know, not having...
You at least play Shaman. That's the only excuse to want to play Draenei.
I don't play Shaman. No,
God, get your fucking life together.
I won't. I play what I want. Well, let me finish my one thought. Then we'll get on to why I play Alliance and don't care about the meta. All of those things. Like, I play retail and I don't have to download a quest add-on to help me find where the hell I'm supposed to go. I don't have to download, you know, a nameplate thing so that I can see the damage easier for that's being done to me and being done to the characters without looking to the corners. I don't have to get all of that extra stuff just to make the game playable like I want the game to be playable. It's already there. It's already in a version that I enjoy, so I can go and play that. And that's what we did. And, you know, in one day we're at 10. You know, one solid day of playing, wife and I have hit level 10, and, you know, now we're up to 20, and then we got our mounts. Like, all of the good stuff.
So you're playing all the way up from zero?
Yeah. Yeah. Completely fresh start. Well, so here's the deal, playing in Europe now because of the EU licensing issues. So you have to have a European license to play on EU servers. So we could play on US servers with our US old US licenses, which we would just have to update. But then, you know, you're dealing with communication, potentially communication.
Well, I was more asking because when you buy the game, you get a free level, like what, 110 character?
Oh, it did not buy the BFA. Didn't get Battle for Azeroth.
Oh, so you just bought the base game?
The $10 monthly play. And I think we have everything up through Legion?
You should have everything through Legion, yeah.
Yeah. And so, like, here's where that didn't matter to me, not having Battle for Azeroth, and why I play Alliance is I don't do in-game content. I'm not afraid to admit I'm not a very good WoW player. That's not a problem for me. And the WoW community had always been, you mentioned it as being good, and it has not been a super enjoyable experience.
The WoW community is not good. The trick to finding a good community in WoW is finding a guild of people that you get along with.
Right.
Because otherwise, everyone else is the worst.
Yeah. And I've spent a lot of time with, same as you, Burning Crusade, Wrath of the Lich King, hell, even Cataclysm some, but not as much as Mists of Pandaria. I played a lot of Mists. Been in and out of lots of guilds because I would get to level cap and then you can't do anything by yourself. You can go back to other races' starting areas and run their beginning quests and just make money. That's not fun. So, okay, well, I'm going to join some guilds. I'm gonna try to run some raids. No, I don't know that my character is not spec'd correctly. And no, I don't know that I don't have the right gear. And no, I've never done this before. Oh, no problem. Okay, come on in and we'll just, you know, we're essentially 9-man, this 10-man.
We'll carry you
real quick and we'll carry you through, right? Then they make that group makes a couple other concessions to other players. And so you're a little underpowered for it. And invariably three or four people either quit or vote to boot those of us who don't know what we're doing so that we can't ever learn. And I had less problems with that when I played Alliance and when I played Horde. So I've made characters for both. And
fair enough.
I don't know. That's about it. And since I don't do all that, now I've just accepted that I'm going to play WoW for a month or two, get to level cap and enjoy the process of leveling and building and making a character that way. And I always find a role-playing server so I can, you know, take my time and read all the lore and never have to rush through anything. And yeah, then after those 2 months, I just cancel my WoW subscription and don't pay for it and wait for the level cap to go up and try again.
Wait for the next expansion? That's fair. Yeah. I mean, it definitely is. There are certain like cultural norms that have been built into WoW over the last 15 years that are hard to get over. And obviously, you shouldn't have to put in that much work to find things to just have fun with.
Right, exactly. And I will admit I'm old. And so the ideas of, you know, going and watching YouTube videos to learn how to play a video game instead of just playing it and learning it while you play was foreign to me. I've become more accepting of that, as I realize there are a lot of very good video game players and you can learn from them just like anybody else, and there's nothing wrong with that. And so maybe this time will be better and I'll be, you know, better at speccing my character correctly and finding the right gear and knowing my role. And mostly I just run DPS so that I don't have to know a role, just do damage.
That's the best part. Yeah. Pick a DPS class and then just learn how to not stand in shit and you have figured out about 80% of the game.
Right. Yeah. That's my goal. This playthrough, wife's doing a Frostmage, rolling Fury Warrior, and just see what happens.
All right. Still should have played a Shaman, but okay.
That's a lot to do when you're a Shaman. You got to totems and
not anymore. They haven't had totems in ages.
Oh yeah.
Totems went long.
Was that Druids?
No, that was Shamans, and it definitely was a thing. It's definitely not like certain classes here. You play Enhancement Shaman, which is the melee Shaman. You have a couple spells, but you just stand at melee and just beat the shit out of stuff with two weapons.
Well, and that's why I went with Fury Warrior, because you just dual wield two-handed weapons, and it's pretty great. I'm enjoying it.
Enhancement Shaman is the melee caster. He just stands and hits stuff, and you have a bunch of like buffs and procs and not so much. Like, it's fun. And every now and then you do that, like a lightning bolt or something for fun. I'm glad. I don't know. I haven't played Reed, so I have played with the same guild now for on and off 3 expansions, and I definitely come back almost always. I tell myself I won't. I come back right when the new expansion comes out, get to level cap, start, you do all the stuff, super gear up, itemize, learn the new meta, run the raid. Then I'll usually make it maybe to the second, sometimes the third raid, and then eventually I get burned out because I am old and I don't have the patience for it anymore and quit. And then maybe pop back in halfway through the expansion, maybe not, and then wait until the new expansion comes out and then somehow manage to repeat it all over again. So
it's going to be different this time.
But at the same time, like, the game just doesn't do it. Like, for all the, like, flack I throw at people who were like, the game is garbage and classic whatever, like, there are definitely, the game has problems and has had problems for a while. And just like a lot of other big MMO continuous games, like the Destinies of the World, like all those, like, some of the changes they make are for the better. A lot of the changes they make are for the worst. You're also never going to please all the people all the time. But it's still, for the most part, like, the underlying structure of the game is solid. Whatever stuff they sprinkle on top for in-game and for expansions, whatever the big MacGuffin is each season. Like, last season, the MacGuffin was super fucking cool and I loved it. This season, the MacGuffin is a super giant clusterfuck and it's just a mess of just not goodness. So... But I don't know. I haven't played retail, like I said, in months. I don't know how much longer I will play Classic, but I will probably, whenever the next expansion comes out, I will probably go back to retail again and play it for 3 to 6 months and then wait until the next expansion.
So that checks out. Yep. That's where I'm at with it.
I don't know. What else is going on? I'm literally not playing anything except for Classic, sort of, but Borderlands probably. I don't know. What's going on your side of the world?
Not much. Like I said, a lot of Assassin's Creed for me. So all of the DLCs are out now. They did them as episodes. So Legacy of the First Blade, episode 1, 2, and 3, and then Fates of Atlantis 1, 2, and 3. So those are all out now. And that's what got me into wanting to make another character and play back through them. When the game first came out, this is not a spoiler, you can play as Alexios or his sister Cassandra, and the story's the same. You're just a different person. They have a slightly different play style, I guess. Not little things feel different. I don't know if they are or if it's just the way you think of, you know, your brain telling you that they are. I will say the dialogue is much better as Cassandra. The voice actor does a way better job for Cassandra than Alexios does. Sorry, Alexios voice actor, if you're listening to this, you do really well. She just does better. That's all. And so I wanted to get back into that. Like I said, I'm about 70 hours into that. Probably almost done with the family storyline. I completed I completed the first part of the Atlantis storyline that leads into the DLC, Become the Top Mercenary. I've done a bunch of stuff. Yeah, it's good. That's a fun game. I don't know. Like, it's really good. And they're launching next week or the week after their educational mode. It's basically like a guided tour through ancient Greece.
Well, that's cool.
Without the playing. So that's something they've started doing. They did that with the ancient
Egyptian ones.
Yeah. Yeah, so you could go, you know, take tours and learn that kind of stuff.
Obviously the settings change, and when the settings change, the weapons change and some things, but like, how different is an Assassin's Creed game today than it was 5 years ago / 10 years ago? Or is it still kind of the same formula when it's all said and done?
Very similar formula. So, I mean, if you go all the way back to 1, it was unbelievably formulaic. So the first Assassin's Creed game was like, go to this area, do
these three quests, and then kill this guy.
These three same quests, and they're all the same, and then you can now have permission to kill this guy. And as you go, you get more abilities that make doing those three missions easier, but they're all the same. And so it was, you know, it's an 8-hour game that almost felt like a proof of idea, because it was right when the PS3 came out, and so it was like, holy shit, look at all the crap we can do now. And it was fantastic. I love the hell out of it. And each one got a little bit better. And then I think by Unity, that was the one in France. So Assassin's Creed 3 felt like it reverted to Assassin's Creed 1 formula. I know people love Assassin's Creed 3. That's the one that's
3 is Ezio? Is that Italy?
No.
Is that 2?
That's 2, Brotherhood, and Revelations.
That's right. 2 had 3 parts of it. Yeah. Okay.
Right. And then 3... takes place in the American Revolution.
Oh, that's right. That's the one. Okay, where you're like the part Native American,
part British guy, and you play through that, and
that was the one that brought the ships in for the first.
Yeah, time. It introduced the naval battles, which blew everybody's fucking mind. Which got you Assassin's Creed 4 Black Flag, which is all naval battles. Just a lot of fun playing a pirate assassin. Like, that game's fantastic for multiple reasons, but 3 felt like that was the first one for the PS4, and so it felt like, holy crap, look at all the things we can do. So it got a new engine, and it got new things that you could do with like a rope thing that you can like strangle people with and stuff. Like, it was pretty cool. but it felt more like, here's something we can do that's new, so we're going to make you do it a lot. Here's something that's new that we can do, so we're going to make you do it a lot. They've gotten much better at being, my wife and I both play. I watch her play, she watches me play, and we play totally different. And there's nothing wrong with that, right? But in three, if you don't play the way they want you to play, it becomes very hard. And then you're into a fight, like an open fighting world, where you're just waiting for somebody to attack you so you can counter it and kill them quickly, as opposed to, you know, being truly sneaky and that kind of stuff. And so that was when it changed, and then they broke it with Unity and all of the problems that it had at launch. The graphics were people's faces not loading in properly, and you get these eyes and teeth just floating in the world, creepy. And then they had a app that you could use where you could play a game in the game on your phone. You'd link it to your Unity game, and it would send you, like, you would basically be running missions, like side missions on your phone to get materials in the game, and those didn't link up properly. It was just really weird, and they tried to do like so many extra things, and none of it worked right. And then they scrapped all that, and then you got Syndicate, which was quite good, and then Origins and Odyssey, I think, have been some of the strongest games that they've put out.
I'm glad to hear that. I'm glad that these last couple have like turned it around and really,
yeah,
not turned it around, but like continue to be strong entries into the system. It's not turning into Call of Duty or, you know, something like
that. And that's something else they did. They ditched the yearly model. So you don't get a game every year anymore. Now you get a big game every couple of years and some DLCs throughout to hold you over. But even without the DLC, when the game first came out, before you could even get the DLCs, I put in 80 hours, over 80 hours to beat it. And it's huge, 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 huge game. I mean, it's all of Greece. So, and you can go anywhere.
Anywhere.
Like, it's wild. Lots of violence. So you get the ship battles and stuff like that that people still love and they're still strong. But yeah, no, it's great. If you haven't played it, check it out. I think it's on sale, PlayStation and Xbox right now. Not on sale, but it's just cheaper now than it used to be. So
I've been sinking a couple hours into, I say I'm not playing anything other than Classic, but I definitely have sunk a obscene amount of hours into No Man's Sky again for the first time since the game came out. The expansion, the new big giant patch with multiplayer and stuff came out, so a bunch of my friends got it. I bought it for PC. I have built some pretty sweet bases. Mainly, I have my own giant freighter ship now that I can land all my other little ships on, and I can do some pretty cool stuff. I'm a pretty good space battler now.
All right, yeah.
It's really good. Like, this is, I think, the game that was originally promised has finally, like, arrived, and it's...
what they wanted, yeah.
It's really fun. It's a lot of fun, so... and it's beautiful. One thing I haven't done yet, so I bought it for the PC to play with some of my friends. I still own it on PS4, but I haven't booted it up in ages. But they've added VR support for it now. So I definitely have a PS... I have a PlayStation VR. At some point, I'm going to have to hook it all back up again and try it out and see how amazing it is. Because I've heard it's real cool.
That sounds crazy. That sounds like I would get nauseous, if I'm being honest.
Yeah, I'm a little bit worried about that. And also, when you play that game, I feel like I played in long stints. So we shall see.
Well, yeah, nothing was, like, what I remember playing, it was nothing was fast.
No. It takes fucking forever to do most things. Right. So.
Yeah. And so you have to, even if I'm only going to do one thing. 2.5 hours later.
Oh, no. I find myself doing that all the time. It's like, all right, I'm going to build this thing. Cool. All right. Well, do I have that? Nope. Okay. I have this and this. All right, I got to go get that. Is there anywhere? No. Take off, fly to another thing, warp to another thing, land, find it. Okay. Got it. Cool. Now we go back. Son of a bitch. All right. Yeah. There's a lot of that. That happens a lot. But
yeah,
once you start learning how to, like, at least like make money and find stuff and become friends with certain aliens, like, I have a good gun now that does a lot of stuff. And it's a really good game, but it's definitely not for everyone. Like, if you're not into like weird survival buildy games that just have a lot of dead downtime in them, you're not going to enjoy it very much. So if you're not someone who got really into like Ark or something like that, you're probably not, this is not the game for you.
Oh, Ark.
I don't know. I don't have much else to say. I feel like the TNA show has been a big letdown. I mean, we talked about all the really good stuff, but.
No, we've killed it. We've got we didn't go a lot of breath. We went deeper than we usually do though. So that's okay.
That's true.
That's where we exist, I think.
We're deep not wide. So yeah. I don't know. Any other final thoughts? Anything going on that's you feel like the people need to know before we call it a day?
That's a good one. Oh, you all should continue reading books. We haven't talked books in a little while. I know Tyler and I will both probably have Tyler will always have something to say about books. I am reading The Island, Aldous Huxley, his last novel, I think, that came out, or the last one that came out. He was alive anyway. So far, so good. It was made into a movie, kind of, in name only, really.
It's kind of fun. It's not good, but it's fun.
Oh, it's a fun movie. And you get to look at Scarlett Johansson and Ewan McGregor for an hour and 40 minutes. So I'll do that anytime. But it's an adaptation of the book, like World War Z is an adaptation of that book, right? Like, it's got some of the same ideas and they do it in different ways. That's okay. But I have never read it before, so I'm reading it. Found a really, really cool bookshop here in London. You have to love to go to, because it's like an hour away from where I live, but it's really neat. And they've got Tyler Mann. They've got this gorgeous hardback Hobbit edition. That's like, I don't know. It's probably 3 inches by 5 inches. So it's quite thick because it's not very big. It's almost like a pocket edition, but like, oh man, the cover on the hardback is really nice. And then just the hard cover itself is got good decoration on it. And it's got all of the drawings, all of the illustrations throughout it that, oh man, it's really, really nice. And The Hobbit and The Lord of the Rings are some of the only books that I did move over here, because moving books is hard because they're heavy and shipping is stupid expensive. And so I haven't convinced myself to buy it yet, but I'm probably doing it at some point in time because it just looks so good. Oh man, you'd love this story. So when you come to this, I'll make sure
I'm excited. I definitely am in the market right now for a new bookshelf because I have started to like, towers of books are starting to form on like other on flat surfaces.
Right, anything that's not running away from them. Yeah,
there are towers of books starting to form on various flat surfaces. So, I actually just finished a book last night. Drew Williams' second book in his The World After series. It's a little fun, little space opera. Not a big sprawling story, but super fun. I also did something I hadn't done in a while. Did a one day book sitting. I mean, a one sitting book read. Because Shannon McGuire's newest October Day series came out, The Unkindest Tide. Mm-hmm. Based on the description and based on what's happened in the last couple of books, I expected it to be soul-crushing and horrible. It was neither of those things. Like, not soul-crushing and horrible in a bad way, but like,
right.
Some dark-ass shit happens to Toby Day and everyone else in her books. And like, a lot of times her books are just like rough. This one, for the most part, was pretty chill. Nothing really terrible happened. Did move the plot along a ton, but it was fun. It had some cool resolutions, some stuff, and it definitely set the stage for more crazy things. I mean, this is now the 13th October Day book, so this is one of those things where I made a mistake. Wow. Where a friend of mine, I knew I was aware of Shannon McGuire. I had read some of her stuff. I'd read some of her stuff under her pen name Mira Grant. A friend of mine's like, hey, you should try the October Day series. This is when there was like 9 or 10 of them, and then I read all 9 of them in like 7 days. And so now when the new ones come out, they get devoured.
So it's like what you did to me with the Dresden Files.
Pretty much something like that. Yeah. Okay. So it just 13th book. It shows no signs of stopping anytime soon. So Shannon McGuire, Unkindest Tide, or Rosemary and Rue, which is the first October Day book. First of the Drew Williams books is The Stars Now Unclaimed. That's not the one I just finished, but The Stars Now Unclaimed is the first one of that. Picked that up on the recommendation of my favorite lady at my bookstore that I go to, Rainy Day Books. She's like the one person who works there who reads sci-fi and fantasy. So her and I just shoot the shit every time I show up. And
nice.
It's pretty fun. So, but other than that, like, thank you all for joining this episode of the TNA show, which is a subset of the Nerdcast brought to you by Project Nerd. We're now 204 episodes in. We will continue to keep coming. Once again, also a huge thank you to Geek Garage at geek-garage.com for all of your super nerdy themed vehicle needs. See some cool cars, get them to come out to your show. It'll be super fun. But other than that, like, until next time, Adam, have a good one, my man.
You too, buddy.
And I'll see you folks all later.
Hey, Pro Nerds, thanks for listening to the podcast. If you like the Nerdcast and other amazing Project Nerd podcasts, please go give us a subscription, a like, a review, wherever you find us, as we need your love and support to continue making awesome content. Next week, we'll be back with another great episode of Nerdcast, as well as other original Project Nerd podcasts.